Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. It's May 12th, 2024. We thank you for joining the big show. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi, good evening, everyone. This is Lori Picka from Michigan. I hope everyone is doing well. And I wanted to say happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. And I hope everyone had a beautiful day.
Yes, indeed. Happy Mother's Day to women worldwide who are mothers. And those who sit in as mothers, you know, all the single fathers who, you know, step up to the plate, and both mother and father, and also, you know, the women out there who, you know, are stepmothers, and the women who are there who play as surrogate mothers and everything. So we're all happy that you could join us tonight to the 24 states and to the 113 countries worldwide. We have a big show tonight. Season 6, episode 68, we'll speak with Clinton Mosley. He's a candidate for the United States Congress in the 2024 election, and he's running in Congressional District 9 in Michigan. So we're going to have him on shortly. And Democrat Clint Mosley is a dedicated father, husband, and well-respected community activist. He has thrown his hat in the ring and hopes to be the next congressman from the Congressional District 9 in Michigan. This particular race has a David versus Goliath setup. Democrats haven't won a seat in over 30 years. The current occupant of the seat is intellectually worse than Boebert, MTG, and Sarah Palin combined, who acts as a rubber stamp for Trumpism. Clinton Mosley seems to have the drive, energy, and enthusiasm to do a great job. We welcome him on the broadcast tonight. We look forward to taking your calls as we speak to the distinguished gentleman of the people. The groundswell for St. Mosley has been amazing. Coalitions win election. A great indicator that a candidate is doing well is their ability to listen to the people they hope to represent. Can Congressional District 9 in Michigan be flipped blue, or will the incumbent Trumper by themselves into power yet again in 2024. This will be interesting as Democrats are ready and really headed strong for the seat. St. Mosley and his campaign is running a no-holds-barred, all-guns-blazing grassroots campaign at the stirring of pot and making the establishment uncomfortable. We need more people like him in Congress, don't you think? weigh in, call in at 515-605-9802. Press 1 to speak live on air. Say your first name and where you're calling in from. Turn off all background noises and don't be rude to our guests or anyone who may have been on the line with you. Thanks for sharing across social media and by word of mouth. Visit www.kitchenpolitics123.com. Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show. We're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Let's get cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Laurie. So happy Mother's Day to you, and I hope you have a great day, and we'll continue to have a great day and everything. So
Absolutely. Tell
me more about, you know, Clinton Mosley. You know, he sounds like a good guy that he could win.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Mm-hmm. The hope is there. As we know, Lisa McClain, this will be her second term. She's in my district. I live in the ninth. And she, you're right, she's a MAGA Trumper. She's a MAGA Trump supporter. She votes against anything that's good for the people. She comes from lots of money. So the campaigning is difficult, not because St. Mobley is not capable or not, you know, eloquent enough or can't speak well or anything like that. It is because it's hard when you're grassroots, especially these days when you're trying to run a campaign. So we are going to also get his website and how people can donate to his grassroots campaign, and let's hope that someone can take his seat. We know in District 10, the last election, John St. James is there, and he almost lost his seat by very few votes. So let's hope that Clinton can do that this election cycle. Maybe he can turn the tables on a do-nothing Lisa McClain. Let's hope.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and remember, we have to put in mind and keep in mind that Lisa McClain was a Republican who, when she first ran, she lied and claimed that Donald Trump was the one who killed Osama bin Laden. And without doing the proper research and diligent search, believed her en masse and voted for her and elected this clown and this loser.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said in the introduction, that she is worse than MTG, Lauren Boebert, and Sarah Palin combined. So that's saying a lot about who she is. And the people in Congressional District 9 for over 30 years hasn't had a Democrat, because the last Democrat that was in there was David Bonner. He was the minority leader of the House back then, and that was way back when and everything. So, you know, let's hope that Clinton Mosley can pull off an upset if he wins the Democratic primary, because we have good candidates, you know, in there. We have Mosley, who we were interviewing tonight, and we also had two previous candidates from who's vying for the Democratic nomination from Congressional District 9, you know. So let's hope a good Democrat is nominated and go in there and give a fight to Republicans so we can, like, win this district, because the Democratic National Committee is putting a lot of money in this campaign, you know, and this is one of the seats that I'd love to see Democrats win. So, calling folks, the number again, 515-605-9802, say first name, where you're calling in from. We're just waiting on Clint to call in. Well, I noticed that we have one number of the 910 error code, and that's Jacksonville, Florida. So we'll get that call momentarily. We're just waiting on Clint to call in. So about a week that went by, do you notice that Donald Trump keeps chatting and blabbering his mouth, and the judge keeps threatening him, saying, hey, you know, I'm going to put you in jail, but nothing.
Yeah, there's something definitely wrong with him mentally. I believe that he has some kind of a mental disorder. He may have dementia. He was talking about gibberish when he went to that beach just recently over the weekend. I can't remember where he was at. Was it Jersey or in that area? And he was talking about the cannibal. Remember that movie with the cannibal? Cannibal Lecter. I don't know if you remember
Yes. Silence of the Lambs. That was a great movie.
Silence of the Lambs, yes. And he was saying that he's a nice guy. What is wrong with him? He was laughing, making jokes about it.
Oh my God. I hope people walk those. That's madness.
Actually, the funny thing is, David, that you said that. I did see on Instagram, a clip where people did walk out. People did walk out because it was appalling what he was saying. He was talking like this cannibal, was a nice person. I mean, what does that have to do with a campaign? What does that have to do with running for a freaking president? This man needs to be put in a straitjacket and locked up. And he needs to have his brain examined. I mean, he is really up to defense. He's really up to defense.
Yes, he
either
is.
Doing some heavy drugs. I don't know what he's doing, but there is something wrong with him. Wrong.
Yeah, check the text message, Lori. Yes. Okay, we're going to speak momentarily.
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
We're going to speak momentarily to Clinton Mosley. And he is running for the Democratic nomination in Congressional District 9. So I have a caller from Jacksonville, Florida. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. What's cooking?
Hey, David, it's Clint St. Mosley. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Loud and clear, Clint. Hello.
Oh,
welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hey.
I didn't realize your area
thank
code
you.
Was Yeah, I didn't realize your area code was 910.
Oh.
I'm originally from North Carolina, and, you know, with moving and life, you just keep your cell phone number, and that was the best one. So.
Yeah, I was thinking it would be 734 or 810 area code. That's what I was thinking. Oh, good. Nice to hear from you. Nice to hear from you.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. How was your day? How was your day?
It was a wonderful day. I celebrated a few mothers. My mother is lived up here and close to me, about 10 minutes away, and my wife, Susan. It was her day. So me and my twin boys, Spencer and Oliver, we tried to, let her have the best day she could have.
Good.
Glad
nice
everybody had fun on Mother's Day and everything. Because, you know, it's hard being a mother, especially with single mothers out there, you know. And, you know, you really have to give it up to mothers. So, Clint, tell us about yourself. Where were you born, your work experiences, education, and what's your upbringing? What was that like?
Yeah, thanks, David. So I was born in Virginia, in the coal mining towns of Southwest Virginia. And we didn't stay there too long. We moved around. My dad was a drywaller and a truck driver. So, you know, we would go where the work was. And that took us from North Carolina to Florida to Indiana. But I was really raised in North Carolina. We came back to North Carolina when I was in fourth grade. And we stayed in High Point, North Carolina from fourth grade through my first year of college. So really, you know, a lot of time in North Carolina. And then I worked in corporate America. I was in telecommunications industry for a while, so I got to move around a little bit. And, you know, was in Knoxville, Tennessee, and that's where I met my wife, Susan. She's from Lake Orion, Michigan. She went to school, graduated from Lake Orion Public Schools, and she went to Oakland University for nursing school and decided that she wanted to go to graduate school. So luckily for me, she went to Knoxville, Tennessee, and that's where we met. And so, you know, we got married in Tennessee, built a house, and decided to start our family, and we found out we were having twins. So we, when we were 7 months pregnant, we moved back to Michigan. And, you know, I tell everyone when I met Susan, you know, if you meet a Michigander and you're a Southern guy, you know that there's a chance you're going to end up in Michigan. And we did 8 years ago. and I absolutely love it. But, you know, your last question was just about my career. I've been in corporate America in telecommunications, leadership, sales leadership. I've also spent a few years in the startup community. So that's an interesting, you know, interesting time. I worked for a company called MomSource Network, and what we did is flexible employment. So we were trying to help moms, dads, retirees, anyone who wanted less than full-time employment. We were trying to connect them to progressive companies, and we were also doing consulting with companies to help them be more flexible. And this was all before COVID, so it's kind of funny that, you know, all these people that we were talking to, and a lot of them, you know, had pushed back and said, oh, we can't do that. We can't have part-time employees or job share or work from home. And then after COVID, of course, we all did, and we were forced to. But that's a little bit about me and, you know, where I come from and what I've done professionally.
Awesome. And you love, you like the state of Michigan, don't you? I mean, I do.
I do.
I absolutely love Michigan. Yeah.
I do. I love the four seasons. I love the, it reminds me of a lot of North Carolina, a lot of water, a lot of lakes, a lot of areas to get out in Southeast Michigan, mid-Michigan, a lot of trails, parks, you know, a lot of opportunities and be out outdoors.
Have you been to Mackinac Island yet? Yes, I'm sure.
We do. Yeah, we love to go one night a year and spend on the island, ride our bikes several times around the 8 mile path, and eat some fudge. And you know, one of the coolest moments that I tell all my friends that are visiting Michigan, I say, you know, if you spend the night on Mackinac, the last ferry leaves, it's just a total different scene, right? It's very quiet. You hear the horses walking on the street and clobbering, and it's a very serene, cool island. I love
it
Mackinac.
Yeah, it is. If you want to relax, you go to Mackinac Island, that's for sure. No cars, no smog, no, you know, pollution. It's awesome. So my question for you is, what made you decide to run for Congress at such a moment in American history? It is decisive right now. It's toxic. It's acrimonious at the moment.
Yeah, I think two things, Lori. I think what you said is true, but also I see a different vision from, so part of this process was knocking on doors to get 1,000 signatures to get on the ballot. And, and we actually, with a lot of help in the local community, we got 1,800 signatures in a short amount of time and took those to Lansing. But as, you know, you're knocking on doors and talking to people, I do think it's an important part of American history, and it is toxic, and there are extremism, and a lot of that is in for-profit media and social media. But I think as we sit and talk to people, you know, we have shared values, shared goals. We just may have a different way of approaching it. So, yes, there's the extremes, and especially on the MAGA side, on the Trump side.
Yeah.
But the other two-thirds, you know, if you think about Democrats, independents, and what some call homeless Republicans, right? They've just been lost by Trump. Mm-hmm. It's not representing their values. That was one of the parts. And the, you know, the second part, too, is there wasn't it didn't look like there was going to be anyone running against Lisa McClain. There wasn't going to be anyone on the ballot. And So we don't have a primary. We don't have an August primary, so we're going straight through to the general election, which is a good thing, but we're not going to treat it that way. But, you know, our campaign's going to treat it like we're running an August campaign to get out the vote, to get people registered, to get our name out there and talk to people about the issues that are concerning them.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's kind of an advantage, to be honest with you. I like that.
It is,
Yes, ma'am. So, you know, what's your plan to better Congressional District 9, and how do you hope to achieve your goals?
Yeah, so there's a few things. I think representation is one of the biggest goals. you know, when I'm elected to this position and when I get to represent the ninth and about 750,000 to 770,000 people in the ninth, is to make sure they're all represented. You know, obviously I'm a Democrat, and I will vote and caucus and do the things in Washington, D.C. to advance our goals, right? Because they're the policies that are going to help the most people. I know that from, you know, growing up in a working class family, you know, seeing the data, seeing the history. So, you know, even though I'm a Democrat, to make sure that I'm representing this red to purple district is a large goal of mine. You know, a couple other things, you know, we're at this opportunity where we really have to decide what our economic policy is going to be, and that includes our tax policy. We have the Trump tax cuts, the Trump, you know, the Jobs Act that's coming up in 2025, and we're going to have to renew that. We're going to have some really hard conversations about a lot of things that it's going to have tough conversations. But I think if you look at, hey, how do we have a fair and equitable strategy, tax strategy, legislation, you know, those are some of my goals to look at. And the last thing I'd leave you with, David, is you know, we've heard about this 118th Congress. They're the least productive in history. You know, at least back to World War II when we started keeping track of bills and proposals and resolutions. You know, the if you look back to the 1940s, most Congresses have produced legislation about 400 to 500 pieces of legislation. And in the last count I saw, the 118th Congress has only produced 59 pieces of legislation. So what they're being paid to do, what they're being tasked to do to represent the people, they're just not doing. And Lisa McClain is an exact example of that.
Yeah. I mean, we saw, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene last week, you know, she wants to oust Speaker Johnson. For what? I mean, for what reason? Because he's trying to do his job, you know, because he worked with Democrats. I mean, she's ridiculous. And, you know, her ilk, so to speak, all need to go. They truly do. There's no reason to have people like that in Congress or in the Senate, you know, that represent us, because they do not represent us. Being a Democrat or a Republican, they don't represent the people at all, you know. So, yeah, we're hoping to get more Democrats in there so that we can have some sanity back, because we need that desperately. I guess President, ex-president, well, you know, whatever. I have to call him this. I call him the Orange Monster. That's what I call him every day. So that's what I'm going to call him tonight. The Orange Monster said that one of his priorities is to cut Social Security. He said that over the weekend. What kind of an incentive would why would anyone want to vote for somebody like that? You know, and talking about Hannibal Lecter, you know, that he was a nice guy in the Silence of the Lambs. I mean, what kind of a mental case is he? Why do we have to put up with this? We shouldn't have to. We shouldn't have to listen to it. And certainly we need more people like you, Clint, to get in there, do some work, and move this country forward. I mean, that's what we need to do.
I completely agree.
You know, it's crazy. It's just crazy. You know, I don't even know what to say anymore. But
well, you said, Lori, you know, one thing you said is about Social Security, and obviously there have been several reports over the years, and I believe the trustees of Social Security have, you know, they most recently came out with one, but this wasn't the first one that said a similar message that, hey, Congress, if you not do something, you know, the trust fund that holds our reserves for Social Security is going to run out in about 2033, 2035. And there's several reasons, but Congress is going to have to do the hard work and roll up their sleeves you know, I would be honored to be a part of that conversation because I think there's real solutions that could be made. I see, you know, my mom is retired. I see how positively impacted Social Security is. I also work, so I currently am a small business owner. For the past 6 years, I've been an insurance. I own an insurance agency, and I work daily with customers who are on Medicare, Medicaid, and you know, Medicare and Social Security are two of the most popular programs out there. And if Trump wants to take that stance that he is going to Social Security cut benefits. You know, you talked about Hannibal Lecter. It's gonna be a horror movie because these passionate seniors who have worked hard to earn that, it's not an entitlement. It's an earned benefit.
No.
They've put in the years of service and paid their taxes, as have their employers.
Yep.
You know, it's gonna be a horror movie for them because it's not right to do, and they know it. Mm-hmm. And it's you're gonna be hard pressed to pull that over. On millions of Americans.
Yeah, he had better believe that.
We have a first caller here from Michigan, and you know, just reminding you, when you come on air, say your first name, where you're calling in from. We're speaking with Clint St. Mosley. He is the Democrat running Congressional District 9 in Michigan for United States Congress in an election for 2024. And yeah, let's take this caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. What's cooking? Hello.
I guess it's me. I came in late. I would like to hear a little bit more of what the gentleman has to say.
Okay.
Yes. No problem.
That sounds good. Elaine from also from Michigan. She's from, I believe, Elaine. You're in District 10, aren't you?
Yes, 10.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. Okay. So the next question I have is, what do you see as the greatest challenge in District 9?
You know, Lori, I would say economic development, how we look at this next, you know, 20 to 50 years is going to be important. And, you know, there's a lot of private economies, especially the lower half of the 9th. You've got Clarkston to Lake Orion to Washington to Romeo. You get up into Chesterfield, Port Huron.
Yeah.
You've got some very good economic centers. And as you go north, you've got, you know, Bad Axe and Kingsville, some great resort coast towns. But we've got to look throughout this. What is the economy going to look like now and as it evolves into the future? And some of the things that are challenges that are important, one is infrastructure. How do, you know, we just passed an amazing record infrastructure bill, right, finally.
Absolutely.
You know, government work, right? And how is that going to impact, and how do we make sure that communities get their fair share where it's needed, it's equitable? Because, for example, in the 9th, you know, we have a lot of areas who were still working to get broadband, high-speed connectivity, cell phone service, right? And again, you know, these, I spent a lot of time in that business, and 20 years ago, 30 years ago, this was a luxury item, right? A cell phone in a car, what a cool concept. But now at this day and age, you know, whether it's education or healthcare, emergency medicine, emergency responses, you need connectivity, you need a cell phone, you need dependable, reliable connectivity, right? Sometimes that's high-speed internet, sometimes that's a you know, cell phone, but those are very important things. I think those are things that are, you know, challenging to make sure that, you know, we continue to grow the working family, middle class, and, you know, again, strong union. Right, I know that's always a topic we like to make sure we cover because, you know, you just look at the statistics and data. You know, when we produce paying jobs, union jobs a lot of the times, you know, again, it doesn't have to require a four-year degree. There's some great jobs that are out there in the green economy. Mm-hmm. solar windmills as you drive through the ninth. It's a beautiful scene. It's, you know, you see these windmills and they fit in great. I think personally, this is the first opinion as I've been driving around a lot in the ninth. There's just something, you know, nice and surprising about it. I know different people have different views on it, but, you know, the amount of renewable energy that we can create in the 9th District, especially the Thumb, is truly amazing, making sure that, you know, we have people who are taking advantage of the opportunity from land owners to workers and everything in between.
Absolutely. Michigan, you know, the 9th District, as you said, and you're right, the Thumb is beautiful too. And I think if tourism could be another part, you know, like Caseville and all those little cities, you know, in Port Huron and all of that. I mean, that could be great. Those could be great tourist towns as well, you know, and right, you need the infrastructure for that too. So, yeah, that's great. That's great for the economy too. So that's a great idea. I love that.
Okay, we'll have another caller. Cafe is calling in from Ocala, Florida. Hello, Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
What's cooking?
Hi, Cafe. Hi, Cafe.
Hey, how are you guys tonight? I'm trying to listen. Of course, AT&T again has other ideas. Oh. And I hate this internet.
I know. What do you
mean? My husband's on Social Security, and that's what we depend on. And this is what they're going after. This is for your guest.
Yes.
And
for Clint, Go ahead.
I'm in Florida. I hate this governor, and they're doing the same thing down here. Is there anything, any ideas besides voting them out of office?
So specifically around Social Security, I think there are several ideas and there are several proposals out there. You know, one of the things that is widely suggested and proposed and that I support is number one, we have a cap on the amount of income that Social Security is taken out of, right? And it's about $160,000. So if you're making $1 million a year, you're paying the same in Social Security as someone that's making $160,000.
That's
so
right.
So that would be, you know, just that and a few other changes would the, you know, the Congressional Budget Office and those who rate these proposals say that would give us 75 more years. Right? Of solvency, right? The second thing, there is another proposal that I do not support, and that is raising the retirement age. Now, it sounds, we did this back in 1983, and at that time it was probably right. Life expectancy was rising, but right now life expectancy is not rising. It's stagnant, it's flat. So until we have another breakthrough, I'm okay tying that age to life expectancy if we see improvement. The life expectancy is not improving at the rate it was from 1983 to now. Thirdly, I would just say, you know, luckily we have we do have the cost of living adjustment that has helped. I know it's helped my mom in the past couple years because it has been a nice little bump. But we have to continue to look at that minimum impact, right? This Social Security, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. It was designed to be a part of your retirement. You know, when it was, you know, we're coming up on 100 years. FDR introduced this almost 100 years ago. It was designed to be part of your retirement, not the whole thing. But as we've gotten away from unions and we've gotten away from pensions, it's become the number one in a lot of cases. It's become all that someone has or a large percentage of what someone has. So we have to take a look at that too. We have to make sure that, you know, we're covering some basic living expenses. And in my business, we call that HUG, H-U-G, housing, mm-hmm. utilities, groceries. Those are three things okay. that we have to look at, whether it's in Florida or in Caseville. We have to mm-hmm. look at that, really making sure that our seniors, again, who have worked and earned this benefit, mm-hmm. have the basic living expenses covered or close to that, right? That we're providing yeah. them, you know, housing, utilities, and groceries, just basic living necessities that, yep. that you know, we're making sure to put that into effect. Because, again, if you're, you know, you have a pension and you have a 401k and a real estate portfolio, mm-hmm. you're mm-hmm. not dependent on that Social Security as much as someone is who's that's all they have. So we have to take mm-hmm. some of these things into consideration. But, again, the ending the cap on the taxes. Right?
I agree with that one. Yeah.
You know, taking a look at reasonable other alternatives and proposals that we can make adjustments. You know, mm-hmm. right now the trust fund is invested in very secure treasury bonds, right? And that's
mm-hmm.
how we've
yeah.
done it here. There's some proposals yeah. to maybe take on more risk, maybe stocks, mm-hmm. some other types of investment.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to be open to it, but we also have to realize, you know, we're just coming out of two significant, you know, three really, if you go back to the .com, you know, mm-hmm. 2008, 2021, you know, we've had some significant market corrections, and do we want our Social Security
yeah.
trust fund invested in that? So, you know, again, as we all do at the kitchen table, maybe a part of that, and we have some mm-hmm. diversification, but there's several things that we can do. But if you just simply, there's two solutions. You have to raise the ages, cut the benefits, or mm-hmm. you have to raise taxes. And that's why Washington, D.C. has not had the courage to act on this, in my opinion.
Oh, you're mm-hmm. absolutely right. We know who runs D.C., so, yeah, you're absolutely right, mm-hmm. and I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. So I have a question.
I do have a question at this.
Oh, okay.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Alana.
I thought we were solvent until the House and the Senate decided to borrow and not pay back from the Social Security Fund.
Yeah, I think there are some there have been some changes over the years, and I won't speak out of context on specifically that. To my knowledge, it is separated. It is a, you know, that trust fund, even if there's some borrowing, it may be short term, but I believe that trust fund is a dedicated, you know, source. And even what they're predicting in 2033 is not a total bankruptcy or a total, you know, depletion. What it's saying is if we deplete that we're only going to have enough people paying into Social Security for the people that are already on it to get 70, 80 cents on the dollar of what they're earning now. So it's not going
mm-hmm.
to totally go away. There's no, you know, catastrophic prediction like that. But it is
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you're going to take a hit, and again, it's all you're living on right now. You're going to take a 20-30% decrease in benefit while pricing for housing, utilities, and groceries are going up. That's that's a tough situation for our seniors.
Mhm. That sure is. I agree.
Well, what are we going to do about getting the fund paid back?
Good question, Elaine. I don't know.
Yeah,
well,
so that's,
the question is for the gentleman.
Mm-hmm, I know.
So it's to raise taxes on especially those making over $160,000, change
mm-hmm.
the benefits. Again, you know, we don't have a lot of there's not a lot of levers we can pull. So if we have to act now. You know, another thing that has impacted this, and you know, very smart people make actuarial projections. And if you go back to the 80s, 90s, and they're always making these every year. But what's happened
mm-hmm.
is back in the 80s, they did not forecast and see that wages were going to remain so low for so long. So we've got wages. We have an income issue and an income inequality issue, and you hear about this. But
yep.
One of the things that happened is, you know, different administrations, both Republican and Democrat, they did not forecast that productivity was going to rise through the roof, but wages weren't going to keep up with that. So, for example, you know, if we look at the minimum wage, I know the fight has been for several years, the fight for 15. But actually, if you look at productivity and even inflation, both of them, that says that the minimum wage should be over $20. So
yes,
we have a wage issue. You know, again, one of the ways that we can solve that is to increase access to unions, because unions have proven, the data and the science is there, that when you are able to collectively bargain, you are able to have better wages, better benefits, better retirement, better standard of living, less accidents, less fatalities on the job site. So unions are a huge part of that. As is in income inequality, and that goes back to the fact that we have to make some tough decisions in 2025 on how we're going to approach our economic and tax policy, and how we make sure it's fair for everyone, especially our working families.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, Clint, other than you being a Democrat and Lisa McLean being a MAGA Trump Republican, what are your major policy differences? Can you list some of them out?
Yeah, so, you know, I think one of the policy differences is our approach to government. I believe the government has a role in our economy and our prosperity. You know, I do not believe government's a bad word. I believe we have to be efficient, effective. Every tax dollar that we spend or that we take in, we have to make sure that we're accountable to that dollar. But you know, the notion that government is bad, I disagree with Lisa on that. The government, you know, we should have a small government. You know, we should have an effective and efficient government. Another that we disagree on is you know, tax policy. I believe that it's fair and fair share, and that, you know, if you look at the past 10 years, we've had record low taxes for especially those making over $400,000. So that's an area that, you know, I think we disagree on. You know, if you look back on, we talked about FDR, if you look back over the 100 years, when we have struggled, right, in an economy, we struggled as a society, we do these large projects that help our future, and we put people to work, and we put money in the hands of working-class families, you always see a growing economy. Right, I can think back to 2000 with George W. Bush. He sent out checks, right? Signed his name on them and sent a check to the hands of everyone. Did this during the stimulus. We had good programs. I don't believe in trickle-down economics because it has proven not to work. But if you look at trickle-up economics, it works. Everyone
yes, it does.
At a level. Their rise, and so again, another difference, you know, again, to your point, David, to your question, how do we disagree? What's the policy difference? I don't believe in trickle down economics. I don't believe that if you give tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires, that is going to trickle down through our economy, because it doesn't happen. They do stock buybacks. They put the money away. So when we give money to working families, we put it. You know, the child care and child credit that we had for a short amount of time were hugely successful in helping families rise out of poverty. So, I mean, the science and the data is there. We can have disagreements, and I think this goes back to your statement, Lori, earlier. Mm-hmm. We can have disagreements about policy and about how we should do something, but we can't have disagreements about fact. We can have our opinions, we can't have our own facts. That's very dangerous for democracy. That's very dangerous for where we're at, is when people, you know, they have their own set of facts. So that's not possible.
It sure is not possible. And we've been hearing a lot of that, you know, these last 2 years. People's minds have been poisoned by the lies that have been told, you know, by lots of Republicans and MAGA Republicans, and we all know that. And some way, somehow, we've got to change change what's happening in this country, or I don't see how it's going to survive. I truly don't. So we have to have good, caring elected officials, people that are true believers in helping people. You know, you have your job, but you have to also be dedicated to your job as well. And that's important. It truly is important. So my next question will
McLean, Congresswoman McLean, the thing is, if she's so against government and she thinks government is a problem, why is she running? Why are a lot of Republicans running? They should just stay home and not be bothered with it, you know? As we say, that they're ruining everything. Cutting taxes for the rich, and like, you're not giving money to public schools but more into private schools. You know, for the military-industrial complex, you know, the deficit, the surplus for the defense industry is sky high compared to the education budget. You know, and it's just everything is just turned upside down for Republicans. They don't really know what's going on, or they don't really care what's going on. People are suffering, and rebuilding the economy. It's a worldwide recession, but yet still not having more. Again, Joe Biden and Democrats are what's going on, and Biden has, you know, reduced the effects of inflation. So, you know, I think Joe Biden has done a great job and everything, and continued to do a good job. You know, and if you elect Democrats like Clinton Mosley, you know, and these deep red districts. Because you notice in Congressional District 3, Lauren Boebert has absconded and fleed to District 4 because Congressman Buck is retiring. And she thinks she has a better chance in winning in Congressional District 4, Colorado, than where she was elected first. You know, and that's part of the responsibility of being an elected official. You know, you're elected somewhere, stay there, face the fire, and, you know, convince the people why you should do the best, you know? Yeah, but go ahead, Lori.
My next question is, when elected, what will be the first thing you will do to hit the ground running?
Yes, I think it's the representation. You know, if elected, that means that we still have 40 to 50% of our district that does not share our same vision. So I think the first thing to do is to how do you continue to show and make sure that the complete ninth district knows that you represent them. And part of that is outreach, right? Making sure that constituent services are set up and running by January 3rd, and making sure that there's a smooth transition from Lisa McLean to our team. You know, people a lot of times don't care who's representing. Some don't know who they're representing. But when things are needed, whether it's Veterans Affairs, you know, sports, there's all these things that are needed. So the first thing would be to make sure that, you know, our outreach continues, that the constituent services is a smooth transition, that everything in our processes are there to support the ninth district and the 700,000 plus of that. You know, on the other side of that, it's getting up to speed and getting, you know, it's a very quick process on January 3rd from, you know, swearing everyone in, getting the new the new Congress, but the new administration, or existing administration there's so many moving parts, you know, committee assignments, things like that. So, you know, getting up to speed and involved and making sure that I'm on the committees that will help the 9th District, but also making mm-hmm. sure that services and that everyone knows, even if you're MAGA, even if you're a Republican, that our office mm-hmm. and that I present in our office and team is going to be here to meet your needs.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Great answer.
I've got something, a little idea for the gentleman. If Lisa thinks that the government is the problem, well, she's in the government. Maybe your literature should say, if government is the problem, Lisa's in the government, she needs to be replaced.
That's right.
Well, you bring up a good point. Another example mm-hmm. of this is, you know, when you vote against an infrastructure bill, as Lisa McClain did, but then you take credit or co-opt the funds that are coming to the 9th, right? There's a lot of examples of this with legislators who vote against something, but then they are sure happy to deliver the check to the, you know, or be at the bridge, the ribbon cutting ceremony for the new bridge that the Biden infrastructure mm-hmm. bill paid for, right? So, you know, you have a lot of these examples and you know, hypocritical.
Well, don't be shy. Put it in your literature.
Mm-hmm.
I said, don't be shy. Put it in your literature. If government's the problem, Lisa's in the government. She's got to be replaced.
That's right. She sure does.
Good marketing.
Let your marketing team know that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Truly is.
Yep. David?
Yes. I don't know if Kathy wants to ask a question.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay,
yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
I've got a question for your guest.
Okay.
His thoughts on the January 6th insurrection, and should Trump be held responsible, responsible and prosecuted fully?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I do think that Trump should be tried for his role in the insurrection. We have a judicial system. We have a justice system. And I do, from what the information I have, and not all of it is out there, but some information that's been widely shared, I do believe that he not only incited, encouraged, and enabled the insurrection that harmed a lot of our police officers in Washington, D.C., I also think that in connection to that, you know, there's in Georgia and other places, there's credible evidence of his election interference, mm-hmm. and I think that the court system, again, as the local prosecutors and district attorneys are taking a look at, they are taking this to grand juries, and I do think that there should be a process against for Trump and his team if they feel like they're being that is it an injustice that they take it through the court system. But I personally do believe that he is a huge part of the January 6th insurrection.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a stain on our history, it's a stain on our country, and I do think he should be tried for that, mm-hmm. along with election interference and other things that have been brought to our attention.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. I agree 100%.
I have another question. What are your thoughts on Eileen Cannon right now?
Oh, yeah.
I apologize. Yeah. Eileen Cannon?
Eileen Cannon, yeah. The one that's...
Never mind. Jack Smith. She's keep hindering Jack Smith from going on with the case and everything, and she's now indefinitely suspended the trial.
Yeah, she's elected.
So, you know, I think she should be removed. What's your thoughts on her as a judge?
You know, I would have to do more research. I know that that, you know, she and a lot of others have delayed these trials, including our Supreme Court. Right? Again, Trump was able to put three conservative justices on the Supreme Court, and paying dividends, right? With their delay and the way they are not bringing a quick resolution during a very important election year.
It's a shame. You know, I believe that that documents case is very important. I think it should be a top priority, in my opinion. In my opinion, because we don't know who, you know, he may have sold those documents to, who read those top secret documents, and then we have a judge in Florida that has just recently indefinitely delayed the trial. So, yes, I think she should be removed as well.
I got another question here. It's supposedly, the trials are supposedly randomly assigned, right? How did she get another Trump trial, given what she did before?
Well, we can answer that question afterwards, but, you know, this time is for Clint and his campaign and everything. So, but thank you for the question, and we'll respond to it before the end of the show. And so, Clint, what's your thoughts on gun control? Do you support the banning of AR-15s and assault rifles?
So, again, I don't believe that I believe the assault rifle ban should be stated. I don't think these military-grade weapons. I talked to a lot of hunters in the 9th District, and, you know, you've got restrictions on some, you know, geese, right, with three shots or you know. There's rules out there, and we're trying to say that there's assault rifles are needed for hunting and safety. They're military grade. They're military assault rifles. There's no place in the general population. On a wider area on gun safety, I do support gun safety, and I think Michigan has led the way. We recently enacted some new legislation that you know, safe storage. Making sure that we have a red flag law similar to Florida, right? It's not just Democratic states or red Republican states that are doing them as well. And I think we have to approach this. You know, we have a gun problem. We have, you know, we have a situation in America, and there's not comparable, you know, you look at other countries that are similar to America, there's not this level of murders and you know, so much damage. And I do think it's mental health, but my solution would be, hey, look, let's walk and chew gum. Let's have an assault rifle base. Let's get some of the, you know, millions of ammunition. Let's take a look at everything. You know, the leading cause of death for, I believe, are under 19 or under 21 year old is gun violence, and you know, it's a we need to look at all solutions. So I think that's part on the supply side. I think it's part on the mental health side as well. So, you know, making sure that we're focused on both and not either or, as I believe the Republicans want to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then that case, I think that was Lake Orion, I believe, where the mother and the father were found guilty as well. That was the first trial in the state where the parents were found responsible for buying the gun for that young man that killed those four students. And I think that that was a huge step. Maybe someone else will think about, you know, taking a gun into a school because the parents or whomever will be found liable as well. So I think that was a big step.
So, Oxford, about 10 miles up, Oxford, Michigan. is where that happened. Yeah, very very close, yeah. Lake Orion and Oxford, but Oxford was the, yeah. the tragedy where four students lost their lives, four young people who had such bright futures ahead of them. And Karen McGill, the Oakland County district attorney prosecutor, I believe it'll be a historic and landmark decision because, like you said, not only I think the first one in Michigan, but maybe the first one in the United States where a parent was held, parents were held accountable for the
should be.
Yeah, for buying the gun. Absolutely. Buying the rifle, I believe it was a rifle. Yeah, crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was happy for that.
Did he address women's health? I caught it and came in late.
Not yet. We're getting to that.
Yeah,
we'll
have a reset stage yet.
Elaine, what was your first reaction, Clint, to the Supreme Court, the reversal of Roe versus Wade?
So I think my first reaction was, Trump and the Republicans got exactly what they wanted by stacking the court, right? This was this was intentional. This was years in the making. So my first reaction, was obviously I'm just so saddened for so many millions of women who have to make that tough choice and their lack of access. So, as we look at the stories from Arizona, the stories from Idaho, Florida, in Idaho, the laws, their basic human rights and basic human needs, we Trump and others want to say, well, it's the state's decision. Well, this is a basic level of care. My wife is a medical professional, and so this isn't, the decision and the tough decisions that a woman has to have with her medically trained and educated physician and medical care. It's just sad and it's ridiculous. But, I think as you've seen, in Michigan, we went quickly into action and we had a constitutional amendment passed with a large majority. And, unfortunately, some other states are so stacked and so Republican and red that's not going to be an option. So, we have to make a choice. Are we going to let this just stay in the states? And for Michigan, we put a constitutional protection for access, but what about all of our brothers and sisters and family and friends in Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, right?
I think
it should be codified. Roe versus Wade should be passed and put into federal law. I think there's some areas we may be able to compromise on and discuss, but my goal would be to put a national protection in order up to and including, if it means eliminate the filibuster.
I agree with the filibuster. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. A woman's choice, let's say we're lucky that we live in Michigan right now because, of what you said, Clint, but, in other states, not being able to have an abortion if you've been raped or incest, that's inhumane. It's inhumane. And you just can't take away those kinds of rights from women. It's just not right. And I think the whole country needs to be on the same page. And I agree with you. A federal statute would be great. Trying to tell a woman what to do with her body is no way to get her vote. I'll tell you that right now. Does not work.
Right.
Does not work.
Yes,
even procedures that are, less than abortion, just women's care in general, that there's a lot of physicians that are scared to spread an article. Again, my wife mm-hmm. is a nurse anesthetist, and so mm-hmm. I read an article about, you know, you have interns and doctors who are getting to medical school and they're making their decision on what state they want to practice in. So it's a race to the bottom when you have these states who are already, you know, let's take rural, you know, Mississippi, Alabama, they're already struggling for access to health care, and now it's going to be exaggerated because physicians and future caregivers are going to think twice about going to that state, because what happens when they have, you know, they want to help people, and what happens if, mm-hmm. if they're scared they're going to lose their license, their livelihood, and be sued or imprisoned mm-hmm. because of the care they were trained to give, they're not able to defensively, securely do that.
Yeah, that's agree.
Mm-hmm. So, Clint, do you fear our democracy is in danger if Democrats do not win the 2024 elections?
It's a really good question, and I think, you know, if you look back over, you know, let's go back 8 years, 2016, there's a lot of signs that it is, right? And mm-hmm. you wouldn't be wrong if you said that it is. You know, I'm an optimist, and I think that this is the greatest country in the world and the greatest constitution. And, you know, obviously, the famous quote is, you know, you have a democracy if you can keep it. So I think we're being constrained. Mm-hmm. I think we're being tested. I mm-hmm. do think this democracy will prevail with we're testing it right now. But I think that it will prevail, but it's going to take it's going to take people like you and Lori and David on these type of shows, exposing, bringing mm-hmm. light. It's mm-hmm. going to take engaged electorate, and we're going to have to all be engaged. We're going to have to, you know, not just at the presidential and federal levels, you know, the library board, the city councils, the school boards, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to take, if we want to keep this democracy, it's going to take everyone getting involved, and every, you know, even showing up to meetings is a great way just to make sure you're putting sunlight on darkness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely mm-hmm. right. I don't know. You're a little more optimistic, and I am an eternal optimist as well, but lately I'm kind of in the dark, so I'm trying to work my way back.
Yeah. Well, again, you hear what Trump is saying, and, you know, you wouldn't be wrong. And you hear what Trump is saying, and you know, Project 2025 and some other things that have come to life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Project 2025 is definitely scary. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, David. Yeah. Yep, go ahead.
You know something? I don't mean to cut you off. Remember my point. Lisa McClain has the nerve to lay into President Biden calling Bidenomics a complete and utter failure when she and her colleagues in the House all voted against the Reconstruction Act and Build Back Better, but yet still, like our guest said, she's taking all the credit, you know, for mm-hmm. like building bridges and rebuilding roads you know, building schools and hospitals and what have you. Mm-hmm. You know, so this lady talks on both sides of her mouth, and the people of Congressional District 9 in Michigan deserve a lot better. You know, I think the best representation is somebody like Clint St. Mosley, who listens, mm-hmm. who understands the plight of the people, you know, mm-hmm. who sympathize with them, who, you know, is there with them, you know,
mm-hmm.
because what he goes through and they go through, they can go through together. And, you know, to me, so far in this interview, he sounds like a man for all people where, you know, the best mm-hmm. thing, you know, one can do is listen, and once elected to Congress, mm-hmm. you know, represent his people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And McClain isn't doing that, you know, because as you all know, MAGA Republicans, you know, they're all for themselves. And so, you're with MAGA, and then, you're with me, you know, and everybody else, mm-hmm. you know, get pushed aside, you know. And Clint St. Mosley is not like that.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, David, one thing to ask, you know, as we were, so Lisa is my representative. I live in Lake Orion, and I live in the night. And so I get her, you know, I'm connected on her social media. I get her newsletter every Friday. And it's just, mm-hmm. it's the same, right? It's the Biden border crisis. It's the, you know, mm-hmm. the Biden is, you know, solely responsible for what's going on in Israel and Gaza. You know, mm-hmm. it's Biden, like you mentioned, just no relation to fact or sanity. You know, it's okay to have mm-hmm. an opinion and disagree with the opposite administration, opposite party.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the that was one of the things that my wife and I, we talked about as we were discussing this run is, you know, her Friday, her Friday newsletter, right? It's it's the Biden border crisis when she is the one that is in Congress, that she is the only one that can fix this. The Congress mm-hmm. is the only one that can have a long-term solution. And,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. she has a proposal. We all know it. She voted against it and voted, and then didn't, you know, because Trump told them not to vote on it. They didn't want Biden
exactly.
to have a win. You know, mm-hmm. that's back to the 118th Congress. They've been the least productive mm-hmm. Congress since we started keeping tabs back in, after World War II, I think, in the
mm-hmm.
40s.
Mm-hmm.
It's productive Congress
yeah.
and its antics and you know, childish behavior, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
like that. And
mm-hmm. What is that there, though?
People.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it sure
mm-hmm.
is. And not
yeah.
only that, it's destructive. It's destructive to the people. It, you know, we're not getting anywhere. They're not, you know, they're being paid basically to do nothing. And, you know, if we work somewhere and we did not produce, we would be fired on the spot, right? That's basically how that works. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah.
I think we should be able to do that to them as well, but that does not happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, David, are you going to do number 9?
Okay, yes. Yeah, so, yeah, what are your thoughts on arming teachers in schools? Do you think, or do you have a plan to make schools safer once a congressman?
Yeah, I think it's a horrible idea. More guns
mm-hmm.
in schools. Statistics have shown
yeah.
that more guns, especially, you know, lead to more accidents, more fatalities, you know, to others and to those who are holding those guns. So I don't support guns in schools. What would
mm-hmm.
I do to make schools safer? We talked about a couple of things earlier with the assault rifles ban, with you know, making sure that we have resources for mental health. But you know, I think this is when we look at the communities that have been affected, Sandy Hook and Parkland and some others. You know, there's some really good work that's been done. And for example, you know, making sure that, you know, we are involving students in this process and, you know, teaching them how to spot signs of potential mental illness, conflict, making sure that, you know, they have a anonymous line, you know, see something, say something. This
mm-hmm.
is work to prevent mass shootings in other situations. And you know, if we can take that type of learning out into all of
mm-hmm.
our schools, and again, I still believe in local, you know, local government and local support and implementation. But if we have these ideas mm-hmm. and resources, and we push those through, that's one of the ways we make schools more safe. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, I hate to be baldy, but you know, it's not just the number of guns or officers or things that you put in that place, because that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that wasn't foolproof either. That, you know, that was a horrendous tragedy there. So I don't believe
mm-hmm.
in army officers, you know, resource officers,
oh.
police officers. You know, I think they've proven to be a good resource with good
mm-hmm.
strategy. No, teachers, no. And there's several
mm-hmm.
ways to get people's paper.
No, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I think, didn't Tennessee or one of the states
they did
pass not too long ago? I found to be appalling. I would quit if I were a teacher there. I would not do that.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion.
Well, again,
okay,
you know, this is another area where we can, again, when you have union representation, which I don't believe there's any district in Tennessee for teachers that do, you know, we have the
mm-hmm.
Michigan Education Association and a lot of good
right.
good unions here in Michigan. You know, not only is your pay higher, but you get to collectively
mm-hmm.
bargain for some of these things that are impacting your safety, impacting
mm-hmm.
Your rights. So it's just another,
mm-hmm.
you know, Tennessee had a big
mm-hmm.
win recently. UAW
mm-hmm.
was to win unionization and membership with Chattanooga with the Volkswagen plant.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see, you know, you're going to see people wake up and realize that, hey, you know, collective bargaining and unions are definitely a tool and resource to a vibrant middle class.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Indeed.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Clinton Mosley. He's a Democratic candidate for Congressional District 9 in Michigan for the U.S. Congress in 2024, and he's hoping to defeat, or yes, not hoping, he will defeat Congresswoman McLean, Lisa McLean. She's a rubber stamp of Donald Trump. And 515-605-9802 is the number to call. Say first name and where you're calling from. And no background noise. Sorry for the bad feedback. Hello, welcome to the call. What's cooking tonight? Madeline in Michigan.
Hi, David. Hello, Lori.
Hi, David. I mean, hi, Madeline.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else on?
Yes.
I just got on, so I haven't really listened to the full conversation
yeah.
put you put in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I did see some text going through about some unions and teachers
mm-hmm.
having guns. I saw
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
Lori, I don't know. I didn't hear your answer in regards to teachers having guns. What's your opinion?
Oh, it's a big no for me. So, and it is a big no for Clint as well. Yeah, not safe in schools. Absolutely not. Go ahead.
Pardon?
I'm going to ask this question next. Clint, I have a little question for you. Should felons who serve their time be able to vote in elections?
Absolutely, 100% yes.
Okay. I agree
yeah.
with you.
Yeah, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think this is, you know, this is a basic part of our Constitution, the able to vote to elect your leaders and you know,
mm-hmm.
Several of our states, Maine, Vermont, D.C., you know, obviously not D.C., not a state, but they allow
mm-hmm.
Incarcerated persons to vote even while they're incarcerated, right? Because you think about it, like, you are living in a government-run place, right? So we've got that,
yeah.
and then we've got some that you know, make it cumbersome and burdensome, like Virginia and Tennessee, even when you've
mm-hmm.
served your time to get out, they make it difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I am definitely for those who have served their time, and I think we should take a look holistically on everyone who is incarcerated. On what does that process look like? You know, we talk about universal suffrage, and we talk about people having the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's something that we have to continue to look at. States are looking at it now. Like I said, several are
mm-hmm.
even allow incarcerated persons to vote.
Yep.
But definitely those who have served their time should be able to vote, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, what do you want listeners to know about your opponent, Lisa McLean, and why they should never vote for her again? You know, I have several. I have a list, a laundry list. But, you know, you as a proponent, you know, tell the people out there listening who want to contribute to you, you know, your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, we've mentioned several of them here today. The loyalty to Trump and MAGA, in on top of doing her job for the ninth and the constituents of the ninth congressional district in Michigan, the hypocrisy, the communication. Blaming others when you have the vote and you have the responsibility to solve issues. You know, those are the type of things that the people of the ninth speak through. The ninth is very reasonable. The ninth, you know, even if you look at the statistics in past elections, don't let that fool you, because the people of the ninth, they know what leadership looks like. They mm-hmm. know when they're being represented, and they know right now they're not being represented fully because the current congressperson is more concerned, in my opinion, with Trump and being MAGA than she is truly yep. representing the district.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
My question, would you support scrapping the Electoral College, and why?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this was a part of our grand bargain to get the colonies to a constitution, and it's well past its time. I mean, for anyone to reason that the Dakotas have four senators when California has two, it's ridiculous. The next popular vote is going to gain steam once people realize what it is, and we're close. You know, a couple more states, especially a couple larger ones, and that's, you know, again, every one person, one vote. I understand how we try to balance things and make sure people are represented.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Electoral College, when someone can lose, you know, by millions of votes, they win the presidency, but they have lost by millions of votes. You know, I think it disenfranchises, you know, people in several states, right? If you're a Republican in California, you're probably being disenfranchised because you probably, you know your vote's not going to count. If you're, you're a Republican and, you know, Democrat in Alabama, right? So I think one person, one vote, universal suffrage, like we've talked about, everyone has the right to vote, and that would be the best way, I think, to increase engagement, increase voter turnout, and that would also help, down ballot and local races representation.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe when you're elected, you could try to make that happen.
Yeah, that is definitely a possibility. That can be done through the legislature, can be done through constitutional amendment. But I think the best path forward and the quickest and most likely to succeed is the national popular vote. Those of you that don't know about that, go out and research it, because several states have already enacted it. Once it gets to the mark, it gets to the level that it would actually impact the Electoral College and the voting system, we may be a few years away from that.
Yeah, the Electoral College never made sense to me. It really never did. But I think we're at a point where one vote, you vote, or if you don't vote, you lose out, you shouldn't be saved because of your state, how many electoral votes you have in your state. You know, that's just wrong to me.
The Electoral College was founded to disenfranchise women, mm-hmm. African Americans, and people who are not mm-hmm. Rich white plantation owners. You know, so mm-hmm. you know that's been scrapped since FDR days,
yep.
even before FDR days. As soon as slave was done, they should have got rid of the Electoral College. So,
mm-hmm.
Clint, what are your thoughts on what the Biden administration and Democrats have accomplished today? You know, they've done a lot in their 4 years and everything with zero Republican help. You know, you want to add anything on?
You know, I think, again, I try to look at facts and truth. And if you look at the landmark legislations, getting out of
mm-hmm.
COVID, you know, through COVID, a lot of things
mm-hmm.
that we've had to deal with, inflation and unemployment, you know, never where we wanted them to be, higher than we're used to, unemployment higher than we're used to inflation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you again, you know, this is a historic
mm-hmm.
time to look at, not just look at historic
mm-hmm.
data, look at the other countries that are similar to us, G7 and such. We've had lower unemployment and we
mm-hmm.
brought inflation quicker with a thriving economy, including the stock market, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, the data says that we've done better than other countries. And you can't compare. I know a lot of people like to compare gas prices now to gas prices during COVID. And obviously, gas
mm-hmm.
prices during COVID when no one was driving were lower than they are now. But, you know, we've still got a lot of work to do. But the Biden administration on several
mm-hmm.
fronts, you know, has been one of the most progressive Democratic administrations I can remember. And So I think they've done a lot, and there's still a lot to be done. So, you know, again,
mm-hmm.
more reason to get out there and vote and bring your friends and family to get the Biden administration 4 more years.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot for Michigan as well. You know, all the infrastructure that's going to be happening, electric cars and all of that. It's amazing what the Biden administration has done, you know,
mm-hmm.
And we need to continue on with it. It's called progress.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans
mm-hmm.
do not
mm-hmm.
like progress. They really don't.
Indeed. Yeah. Let's take one more call.
Yeah.
It's called
progress and not perfection too, right? Like there's still
yeah.
several things we need to work on, and we haven't, you know, you try when you're leading,
mm-hmm.
you try. And sometimes you wish they could have been different or better, and you regroup and you go
yep.
back after it. But, you know, it's not perfection,
mm-hmm.
it's progress, but there's a lot of
a
progress.
There's a lot
mm-hmm.
of progress.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
And what were you saying,
yeah.
David?
Yes, we'll have one more caller. I think this is Doris from Michigan
okay.
as well. And
okay.
we want to apologize to the listeners out there for the crackling. Block Talk
yeah,
Radio has been having some technical difficulties.
Yeah, they sure
last show was supposed to have. We didn't have because nobody couldn't get on air because of these technical difficulties.
Yeah.
So hopefully people listening to Clint will understand clearly and send money to him and everything. So by chance, Clint, if people want to send money to you, where do they mail it
mm-hmm.
to? Or is there an email? And is there a website for you?
Yeah, so I am on ActBlue. So if you just search Clinton
mm-hmm.
St. Louis, there's a link to the campaign there. We
mm-hmm.
are finalizing our website right now, and it will be Clint4Congress.com. So Clint, the number 4Congress.com. And
mm-hmm.
Clint, the number 4Congress@gmail.com is a good email if you need an address, you know, for to mail
okay.
a check or any
yeah.
other concerns or questions or correspondence you may have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Yes. Let's talk to Doris from Flint, Michigan. Hello, Doris.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show. What's cooking? Do you have any questions for Flint?
Well, no, because I just got on. I was helping somebody who was on hand yet. But anyway, it sounds like you're near a campfire, so that's what I'm thinking of, a nice warm campfire crackling here. I just want to know, I'd like to know where Clint, is he running in Michigan? He's running
District
in Michigan.
Nine. District 9.
District 9,
against,
where I live. Yeah, where I
Who's
live.
In there? Is there a Republican there now?
Yeah, Lisa McClain
yes,
is a Republican, a Trump Republican.
Oh, yeah, bad news. Okay, all right. Clint for Congress.com, right?
Yes.
Yes, I will be live this week. If you try to go to it right now, you may get an error message, but just save the address, save the name. It'll be live this week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
That's for donation.
Look that up. Okay.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I already did with Marlinda, so that's good to know. You know, all we need is to win a few more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're right.
So when you're officially the nominee for the Democrat, so Clint, when you're the official Democratic nominee to challenge this Congresswoman, do you have any debate set up for her, or she'd rather not debate you?
Well, that's the plan. Again, you know, reaching out to trusted resources here in the district, news outlets, and League of Women Voters. You know, I would love the opportunity. And in the past, I don't believe she's shown the wherewithal to want to do that. But hopefully this time, and for the sake of the 9th district, the constituents there, and for democracy, we can have a debate on issues and our goals and vision for the future.
Yeah, I think she needs a little bit of fire under her feet, so... Maybe she's not feeling, how do I put it, not threatened, that's not a good word, but, you know, she's not feeling the heat of Clint mostly coming on yet. So I would love to see you debate her. I think that, you know, if you're running for an office like Congress or Senate, you should have to debate. I mean, that's the right thing to do. You should have to debate. So I think that would be a great idea. And Clint, if you do do debate her, would you let us know?
Absolutely.
I would love to come and watch it. I really would. I would stare her down. Yeah. I don't care for her, as you can tell.
I'll join you.
I have a negative feeling.
I'll join you.
That name.
Yep. Hello, Elaine. Awful woman. Let's see. I'll have this question. Do you support the creation or the continuation of a program such as Medicare for All or ACA, which is, of course, the Obamacare Act? Or do you have a different idea?
Yes, so I definitely support Medicare for All. I believe a staggered approach is the way to do it. So, and Obamacare, you know, so many great things from eliminating, you know, denials for pre-existing conditions to access. Again, another great piece of legislation that was progress, not perfection. You know, as we go, when you have these monumental legislations and changes to the current state, we're going to have to come back for version 2.0, 3.0 and make some changes. So I think anytime we do this legislation, we have to set the clear expectations that it's not going to be perfect. Try to think about everything, but there's things in these economies and dynamics that we have to come back and fix and remedy. But I support a Medicare for All. How do we pay for it? Again, we've talked several times tonight about how do we, you know, we're going to have some conversations about how our tax policy and what that looks like for our economy and who's paying their fair share. But, you know, the one thing I would tell you, I believe Medicare is a great example. I do not want to eliminate private insurance. I think there's a place for it. But I think if you look at Medicare says, hey, you know, David, if you work and you earn the credits through your working career, you're going to get Part A. And if you pay a little bit, you're going to get Part B. And then what is also is Medicare supplement private insurance. Medicare Advantage, private insurance, and they say if you would like to enhance your basic level of care, you can do that, right? And it's still regulated to protect seniors because, again, we've got to, you know, make sure our most vulnerable are protected. So some oversight, some compliance, some regulation to make sure there's standardization and clear communication. But that's a great example of how we have, you know, a public government program paired and partnered with a private capitalist option, and they work really well together. And so I think as we bring down Medicare, you know, one of the things that we also have to, on the other end of that, so as we're bringing down Medicare, you know, we have to make sure that our kids, our infants and our children, adolescents, are receiving the health care they need and deserve to thrive. Because a lot of the things we can, if we do it right in the first 18 years, we have less costs and less issues in their adulthood, right? So, I think you have a Medicare for all, you have a private partner, public-private relationship, as we do with Medicare right now. Have to, you know, we have to talk about how we...
Hello?
Oh, we just lost her.
Oh, no. Yeah, Black Talk Radio been having... Oh, you hear her? Okay, good, good. I don't know what happened there, Clint. Yeah, but go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, you know, we do have to talk about how we're going to pay for it. But, you know, right now, you know, as a family of four, I have a large premium I pay every month, every year. And then I have co-pays and deductibles. So, you know, there's been many that have explained it well. You know, if you look at, you know, you look at your overall out-of-pocket, Medicare for all is going to have a lower overall out-of-pocket than what you're paying now. So, you know, where you pay it could be different. You know, you pay your premium instead of paying it to your Blue Cross Blue Shield, you're paying it to the U.S. government. But it's in a way that your overall out-of-pocket, you know, your premiums, your the amount you're paying is reduced, and the level of care is the same or better. So that's the goal. You know, again, we're the only country our size and our economy to not have a basic level of healthcare. And
I agree. It's kind of a shame, to be honest.
So, Clint, last question before we let you go. The U.S. Senator from Alabama, Katie Britt, was saying that there should be a database, a national database, to track women who are pregnant. And we touched on Roe versus Wade earlier in the program and everything. You know, what's your thoughts on that, that craziness that Republicans want to control women's bodies and, you know, have a national registry for pregnant women?
Yeah, it's craziness. It's what you just said. Women have to have reproductive rights. It's a basic level right. It goes into health care. It goes into so many parts of equality. You know, to track someone's menstrual cycle and the level of invasion that is, it just goes back to me. It goes back to, you know, just being hypocrites about several things, right? We want to be tracked in this area. We don't want to track in this area. It's craziness and insanity. And again, this is another level where I think they're trying to do things to appease their base. Maybe it's what they truly believe in their hearts, but I think it's more they're trying to appease their base and what their need for power. And women and men and families right through it, but especially women. They see, you know, this is not a popular choice. This is not a smart strategy. It's something that's so fundamental to women. to put this on the ballot to, you know, involve politics in this. Reproductive rights are a basic human right. You know, we've talked about how we've enshrined that in our Constitution in Michigan, but we've got a lot of work to do to make sure that this is enacted federally, to make sure that, again, our American citizens in Alabama and Mississippi and Florida and Arizona, Idaho, that they have a basic level of care that they are having with their physician and their medical teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I have a thought I want to just bring up when you're talking about health care.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember that when Obama, all the things coming up under Obamacare, the ghastly things were going to happen, and I remember very well the visual of grandma being pushed off a cliff. That was something that went along with somebody being pushed off a cliff in a wheelchair. And I think they ought to bring that little picture back when they're talking about what Obamacare is, and that's how they used to talk about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fear,
right?
A lot of fear in their strategy. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. Lori, do you have any final question before we let Ken go?
Yes, final question. Yes, I do. I have one last question. Let me find it here. Do you think that AI should be regulated?
What?
I do, yeah. Yeah, artificial intelligence is an amazing technology. I think it has the capability to do a lot of great things, but as with any new technology of this magnitude, it has opportunity to do a lot of bad things. And I do think that the, you know, the technology should be regulated in a way that we make sure that we are progressing at a speed that is, you know, it's still cutting-edge technology, but we're making sure that we put safeguards. You know, we have seen that social media, the negative impact it's had to our children. And, you know, I think we have to make sure that artificial intelligence, that we create an ecosystem to let it thrive, but we do so in a way that is equitable. It's fair. It has all the stakeholders, you know, obviously the private industry and those who hold these patents and technology. But yeah, it should be regulated. And I think there's a lot of, you know, parties that are involved right now that are trying to do that, to try to put together, you know, both in Europe and here in America, that are trying to put some guardrails to make sure that we utilize technology, but it's done safely.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. 100%. It's kind of scary to me, in a way, when you can't tell if something is real or not. You know, that's what scares me about it. So, yeah, I hope it is regulated and smartly regulated. I really do.
All right, Clint, thank you so much for coming on to the show and everything.
Yeah.
And you know, good luck in the campaign. You keep a close tab on your campaign and wish you all the best. And you can go to Clint's website when it's up, hopefully soon. ClintForCongress.com. C-L-I-N-T, the number 4, Congress.com. It'll be up and running soon. And email is ClintForCongress@gmail.com.
And then you're on ActBlue, you said, right, Clint?
Yes, on the ActBlue. If you're signed up there or you would like to help provide a donation to the campaign, click Clinton St. Mosley or Clint St. Mosley in the search, and it'll guide you right to us.
Okay, sounds wonderful. Thank you so much. I loved interviewing you. I hope that you do debate Lisa McClain, and if she does, please let us know. I would love to come, and I wish you well. And if you have time, we may have you back before the election.
Absolutely. All right, Lori and David, thank you so much for what you're doing. Appreciate your audience's questions, and stay connected, and I'll do the same to you.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank
definitely.
You.
And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
All right. Have a great night.
You too. Yes, bye now.
Yes, that was Clinton Moore, the ex-congressman from the great state of Michigan, representing the congressional district land against Republican Trumper, Lisa McLean. And happy Mother's Day to Clint's wife, Mrs. Mosley. And, you know, taking care of those twin boys and everything. Good going. Motherhood is not an easy thing, you know. It's a good thing, you know, that, you know, so much mothers out there are caring and compassionate and decent human beings, you know. And for the fathers who are out there who are, you know, deadbeats and what have you, you know, kind of step up, you know, be a man. Because a woman didn't create the baby herself. You helped. So when you get a woman pregnant and run off and don't want to, like, take up the responsibilities like a man should, you should be in jail, you know. You should be castrated. You should be, what's the operation to have? Vasectomy, you know. Instead of Republicans have all these laws trying to govern what women do with their bodies, you know. They should have tougher laws against men who will step up to the plate, you know, to get women pregnant and just run off. You know, so Clinton Moore's room is a great congressman, you know, and sorry for the feedback and, you know, the noise in the background. Block Talk really needs to be better. So everybody on the phone, you know, do you have anything exciting to speak about that happened in the past week?
Yeah, I did. I already talked about the orange monster, talking about Hannibal Lecter. That was so bizarre. I didn't even. And he looked so. He looked red, and it was. It's appalling. It's appalling. They just allowed to talk like that.
But the thing is, you know what, ladies and Laurie, I think that the election, the different polls are so close now, but I just get the sneaking feeling that, you know, because of his political theater and his ridiculousness that's going on in the courtrooms, people are sick of it, and they're waiting until November 5th, election day, to go in there and just blast Republicans to smithereens. And that's why I think Clinton Moore has a chance to upset this incumbent in Congressional District 9. No amount of money can save you because, you know, elections, it takes money to win, but Lisa McLean is so far up above a Donald Trump in terms of policy, in terms of, you know, jumping to say, you know, what he should do. And Clint Mayer makes some point that stand out with me where, you know, she voted against the infrastructure bill, but yet so she's taking credit for it. You know, the hypocrisy. You know, these Republicans are delusional. A level-headed person like Clinton Mosley will bring decency and honesty back to the United States Congress. And as Clint said, that it's the most ineffective Congress since World War II. Nothing is being passed. And what's being passed is to hamper women, hamper immigration, hamper gun control, you know, hamper things that should make America move forward. You know, so we definitely can do better than what we have now. And Clinton Mosley is one of the people who will bring that respect and accountability to the United States Congress. And you also talk about, you know, having the wealth appear their fair share. Was our cooperation, was our wealthy person making over $400,000 a year. You know, that's how, you know, the collective level can grow as America and do things that need to be done. You know, so yeah, I'm going to really follow this campaign and, you know, donate money to the cause and everything because I feel you can make an effective congressman.
Yeah, it's time for the MAGA Republicans to take a hike. I'm going to be blunt about it because they really have done nothing for their, you know, for their constituents. They don't care about the people. They don't. You know, they basically lie to our faces and expect us to just
voting for them. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. They're not going to take away mm-hmm. women's rights and then think that they're going to get voted back in. Not happening.
Mm-hmm.
So they should all be very worried. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Michael
yeah.
Johnson, for being the Speaker of the House, he's talking about passing a law so that non-citizens can't vote, which, of course, they can't anyway. I thought that was ridiculous.
What a waste of time.
Bring that up. Huh?
That's such a waste of time and ridiculous.
Yeah. And he said, we all know intuitively. We all know intuitively, but not by any evidence. We all know intuitively. That's the same way as believing something without evidence,
mm-hmm.
which is a very not very unprofessional for him to even say. And
yeah,
somebody that's ignorant. He's not ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that he brings up doubt when he says that. We know intuitively that that it's happening. And I had a sort of a nephew, right? He's a new nephew because we didn't know he existed before. He wrote, we all have a gut feeling. And I thought, that sounds just like intuitively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of the question. You know, one thing
mm-hmm.
that he was mentioned by Clint, he was saying about we have to think how we pay for it. Of course we do. But one of the things that I have a concern about, I'm just throwing it out, is the lobby, the big money, and I'm going to be asking people running for office, how do you feel about getting that out of politics, you know, Citizens United? That's real important to me. Because
mm-hmm.
with that in there, you know, you're competing with other people with money, but AOC doesn't have to go to that. Bernie Sanders doesn't have to go to that, but it still makes it harder unless you get the money out of politics. But the thing about how will you pay for it, we never say that when we're going into a war. We never say
mm-hmm.
that when we go into certain ventures. We don't say, but how will we pay for it? We
yeah.
ask it about health care and other things like that, which all these other countries have. That's all I was going to say about that.
Yep. You better believe it. Absolutely. More show. The other thing is that, you know, we have to make sure that everyone votes that can vote, because we are at a point, and I say this every single week, and I'm going to keep on saying it, we are at a point where we can't really look at, you know, their ages anymore. We can just watch Trump at the Orange Monster and watch him for 5 minutes and just know that he is unfit to be a human, much less a president. And if he...
Right.
does by some fluke become president, we may all leave the country because it's going to crumble. He has horrible plans to destroy our democracy, and he won't do it alone. He already has his choices that he will make to put the right people in, and those are the ones that are going to make the choices and do the dirty work while he is the so-called dictator, and he won't leave us until he dies. That'll be the second thing. So we have to vote for Democrats all across the board in order to
mm-hmm.
save our democracy and get
Indeed.
Rid of this that we've been living with since 2015.
Mm-hmm.
We have
mm-hmm.
to.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so did you know... we're going to talk about Did You Know Now. Yes. Did you know a lifeboat drill was canceled the morning of Titanic tragedy? According to passenger author Godfrey Puchen, a routine lifeboat drill was scheduled on the morning day the Titanic had a disaster. However, the crew never assembled for one, and it was canceled. And that's when it hit the iceberg, and, you know, the rest of history and everything.
Yeah.
Interesting fact to know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You have another one?
Yeah. Did you know that people in medieval England had rap battles? Before rap battles, there was something called, in medieval times, flighting. This is when two opponents would trade insults with each other, and it was widely popular in the 15th and 16th century. So I guess rap's been around since then, but I had it, that called it flighting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have a
mm-hmm.
couple. Let me see. Did you know that humans cannot walk a straight line without looking at something? Without what? Pardon?
Without what? Without, you can't walk a straight line without what?
Without looking at something. Without looking at something. Humans cannot walk in a straight line without looking at something. That's probably, yeah, never thought about that.
Yeah, I never thought about it either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Australia is wider than the moon. I didn't know that either. Wow.
Interesting.
Interesting. When you start reading these things, it's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, one more.
Okay.
Honey never spoils. If you're worried about honey, honey never spoils. I didn't know
right.
that.
Mm-hmm.
I always worry
what
about
never
honey. Honey.
Honey.
Honey never spoils.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't know
that. They have found honey in tombs.
Pardon?
Mm-hmm.
They have found honey in tombs.
Oh, really?
Tombs. You know, burial grounds for the Egyptians, tombs.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They have found jars of honey.
Oh, wow. That's pretty interesting.
They've also found wheat seeds.
Really?
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't have to worry.
Well, the seeds go dormant.
Yeah. Oh, and Michael Cohen is going to be on the stand tomorrow. That'll
mm-hmm.
be really. Because you know what they're going to try to do to Michael Cohen tomorrow.
Oh,
they're going to
talk
about tomorrow, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Did the prosecution go first? Does anyone know?
I think so. I thought the prosecution did because the other one does the double, you know.
Okay.
Has
so
a chance to cross-examine.
Yeah. So when the defense comes up, you know they're going to try to portray him as a liar, a fixer. You know, he went to prison because of what he did, blah, blah, blah. So, are we out, David?
Yeah, we're running out of time and everything. So, again, thanks to our guests who interviewed tonight, and wish him all the best. It is rare for Congressional District 9.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hopefully he can win. I think he's, you know, he's going to give McCain a run for our money and everything. We'll have people tired of Trump with him. And I want to thank Madeline, Doris, Elaine, and Kathy for calling in to the program and asking questions.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you, everyone.
And then we'll be back again tomorrow night, same time, same place, for another edition of Kitchen Politics 123. To follow, you can go to kitchenpolitics123.com. And also, if you want to follow this show, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/progressivetalknow. Until tomorrow, I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Laurie.
Good night, David. This is Laurie Pickoff from Michigan. Everyone have a good night, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Good night, everyone.
This is one of our little boxes. This is just filled with some of the things that we had started gathering for her while I was pregnant.
Yep.
And it's her little baby book. The outfit that she was going to maybe wear home from the hospital. All these. This is the blanket that she was in.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.